And welcome to Next Reads, a podcast where we read the first chapter of a young adult or middle grade book to help you figure out what to read next. This podcast might contain language or situations some readers might find offensive or unsettling. The North Liberty Library does not necessarily endorse any author's views, but it does support the freedom of speech and the freedom to read. I'm your host, Kayla, the Youth and Teen Services Librarian at the North Liberty Library. My pronouns are she and her. Welcome, listeners. Today, I'm going to be reading from That Weekend by Kara Thomas. She is the author of The Cheerleaders and Little Monsters. She's been nominated for the International Thriller Writers Award and has written for the Warner Brothers Television. The book we're reading today is a young adult book published in 2021. The summary is three best friends, a lake house, a secret trip. What could go wrong? It was supposed to be the perfect prom weekend getaway, but it's clear something terrible has happened when Claire wakes up alone and bloodied on a hiking trail with no memory of the past 48 hours. Three went up the mountain, but only one came back. Now, everyone wants answers. Most of all, Claire. She remembers Friday night, but after that, nothing. And now, Kat and Jesse, her best friends, are missing. That weekend changes everything. What happened on the mountain? And where are Kat and Jesse? Claire knows the answers are buried somewhere in her memory. But as she's learning, everyone has secrets, even her best friends. And she's pretty sure she's not gonna like what she remembers. Ooh, so that's the summary. This is a mystery with an edge-of-your-seat thriller, unexpected twists, and moments of soapy melodrama. Some content warnings are child abuse, domestic violence, sexual assault, incest, drug and alcohol abuse. Please take care of yourself first. So, without further ado, let's read the first chapter. Chapter 1. Now. Earth, cold and rocky, pressing against my cheek, tree roots digging into my body like hardened veins. I open my eyes to an assault of sunlight, wincing at the pain it sends radiating through my skull. In my ear, panting, presumably what pulled me out of whatever state I was in. Unconsciousness? I don't want to think about that word or what it means because I don't know where I am or whose tongue is an inch from my ear. I turn my head in the direction of shouting. A woman's voice. Annoyed. Tucker, get over here. I blink until the face of an enormous black lab, inches from mine, comes into focus. When I prop myself up on my elbows, the dog takes off, barking, running small semicircles in the area around me. The woman shouts again, "Damn it, Tucker! Help!" My voice scrapes in my throat like I haven't used it in some time. I lick my lips, find they're cold as stones. Footsteps grinding twigs into the ground. The owner of the voice emerges from a cluster of trees to my right. Good Lord! The woman's silver hair falls in curls down past her shoulders. Tucker gallops over to her and sits at her feet as she sets aside her hiking poles and digs a pollen spring from her pack. She uncaps the bottle of water and hands it to me. What's your name? Claire, I say. My name is Sunshine, the woman says. Are you alone out here? I don't know. I swallow down a knot of dread as my brain orients itself. It's prom weekend. I don't know why this is the detail I latch onto, but it's the one thing I know for sure. Where are we? Bobcat Mountain, Sunshine says. I hold the water bottle to my lips, watching Sunshine's face cloud with concern. Tucker trots over to me, his nose bumping the back of my hand and leaving a trail of doggy nose drool. I lean on my free hand, pushing myself up to get away from him. Pain shoots from my neck to my eyes. I roll onto my side and gag up the sip of water. Sunshine's voice cuts through the ringing in my ears. What hurts? My head. Hurts is an understatement. My skull is being cleaved in two. I blink away the spots of light clouding my vision to see Sunshine standing up. She brushes some dirt from the knees of her pants. You could have a serious injury. I'm going to hike to the ranger station to call an ambulance. A tsunami of panic rises in me. I don't know where the ranger station is or how long it will take Sunshine to get there and back. Please don't leave me. I promise I'll be back as soon as I can. She's gone. The crunch of her feet on the trail fading with each passing moment. Tucker nudges my ear with his nose before taking off after sunshine, and I'm alone again. I squeeze my eyelids shut until they oscillate with the threat of tears. I don't know where I am or why I'm alone. I know nothing except for the fact it's prom weekend. It's prom weekend. My nails are scarlet to match my dress, a boat neck with a high-low skirt. I'm not on Fire Island, where I told my parents I was going after prom, and I'm hurt. My parents are going to know both of these things very soon. I will the last few days into focus in my brain. I see my scarlet dress, which cost an entire paycheck. I was honestly relieved when I returned it to Macy's Friday morning and thought of the money going back into my checking account. I turn a trembling hand over, the past 48 hours coming back in a steady drip, drip. It's prom weekend, but I didn't go. I never got my nails done. They shouldn't match the dress I never got to wear. The cut bisects my right palm, an angry fish gill crusted with blood. It doesn't hurt, except when I flex my hand. How did it happen? A pulse of pain radiates from my brain. Too much. Give us a simpler question. How'd I get here? I'm in knit shorts, a ribbed tank, my go-to gym class outfit. I don't remember putting it on, lacing up the sneakers, squeezing my throbbing toes. Blisters, probably. How long have I been here? I don't know how much time has passed when Sunshine returns with two men. One is old and in a green uniform, the other young, wearing a blue shirt that says EMS. They circle me, murmuring assurances that make my eyes cloud up. Can you show us where you're hurt? I raise my bloody left hand, and the EMT produces a first aid kit from a small duffel bag. When he tears open an alcohol wipe to clean my cut, the ranger says into a walkie-talkie, young female, possible head injury, need to evaluate her. What does that mean? I sit up, ignoring the sting of alcohol on my cut. Sunshine's hand is on my shoulder. Claire, it's okay. You can't hike back down in your condition. The men are gone, out of my line of vision. Tears pool hot in the corners of my eyes. What are they going to do with me? They're going to have to carry you down on a stretcher. I'm trembling by the time the men are back with the stretcher. While one straps me in, the other lays a foil blanket over me. My stomach dips as I'm lifted from the ground. I close my eyes, the rocking motion pulling me towards sleep. Claire, one of the men says, we need you to stay awake and answer some questions. The missive my parents had me memorize every time we went somewhere we could get separated runs through my head. When they ask me my address, I tell them it's 32 Carmen Road, Brookport. The ranger asks, where is that? Long Island, right? The EMT says. Yeah. I swallow against the nausea swirling in me. You're a long way from home, the older guy says, and for some reason, this is the thing that finally makes me cry. We're at the bottom of the mountain, at the parking lot, which I only know because the ranger announces we're at the bottom of the mountain. I'm loaded into the back of an ambulance, and the last thing I see before the doors shut in my face is Sunshine, frowning. When the doors open again, I ask why we've stopped. We're at Sunfish Creek Hospital, the EMT says, pulling out the ramp and guiding my stretcher down it. Did someone call my parents? I murmur. The EMT frowns, pushing my stretcher toward the hospital entrance. You gave us their number on the ride over. You don't remember me telling you they're on their way? I had an entire conversation I can't remember. It's unsettling, but not as much as the fact that my parents are coming here. I said we're going to Fire Island, which is a short ferry ride from home, and not to my best friend Kat's grandmother's lake house in Sunfish Creek, 3 hours away, in the Catskull Mountains. I didn't lie because they would have said no. I lied because Kat's parents definitely would have said no. Kat. I would not have gone hiking on that mountain without Kat. Where are they? I'm shivering, despite the blanket. Where are who, Claire? My friends, Kat and Jesse. The EMTs roll me through the hospital entrance. I'm not sure they even heard me over the sounds of radios blipping, a siren behind us at the curb. We stop in a white hallway, beneath the sign reading triage area. The older EMT grips my wrist with two fingers, counting my pulse. You are hiking with friends? I close my eyes, reach back in my memory. There's nothing but Sunshine's face and mine, knitted up with concern. Kat, at the lake house last night, stowing hot dogs in the fridge for tomorrow. We were supposed to go camping, I say, as the EMT clips some sort of meter over my finger. But I don't remember how we got to the mountain. Try to breathe, the EMT says, frowning as the contraption on my finger beeps. Your heart rate is high. I close my eyes. It's startling how long it's been since I felt pure, undiluted fear like this. I feel like I'm 5 years old again, wading through the crowd at the county fair, and I've lost grip on my mom's hand. Will someone find them? I ask. I'm going to call the ranger station right now and have them send someone up to the campsite. The EMT pats my shoulder. It'll be okay. You're gonna be okay. It's not until he disappears behind the sliding door that I realize he's not coming back. His job here is done. He's off to rescue the next moron who got lost in the woods. My stretcher begins to roll again. An orderly wheels me through the emergency room doors, past stretchers docked in every corner and along the walls, occupied by moaning bodies. A spindly woman is handcuffed to the railing of hers, despite her being unconscious. Somewhere in the distance, a man yells that he shit himself. As the orderly guides my stretcher behind a curtain, a woman in scrubs trots over to me and plops a plastic-wrapped gown at my feet. You'll need to change into this. The orderly disappears. The nurse draws the curtain and turns her attention to the cart she dragged over behind her. Name and date of birth? I rattle off the information she needs, and she types it into the machine in the cart. She prints a plastic ID bracelet and fastens it around my wrist, her eyes never meeting mine. My bladder is going to burst any second. Where's the bathroom? I ask. Paramedics say you might have a head injury, she says. You can't be going to the bathroom alone. I'll get an aide to bring you a bedpan. Horror washes through me. I have to pee right here? Sure do. We need a urine sample anyway. The gown ties in my back. The nurse whisks away. I peek around the curtain. A man in a hospital gown plods past me, totting an IV drip behind him, a cup of pee in his other hand. I glance in the opposite direction where my nurse is now bent over a computer. The ache in my stomach is so bad I'm sweating. Another 5 minutes and I'll probably piss myself. Screw it. I get out of bed and make a right, the direction the man with the pee cup came from. There's a bathroom at the end of the row of curtains. I duck in, wriggle my shorts down, and plop on the toilet. The relief is so great I could cry. I hobble over to the sink, plunge my hands below the tap. The water that swirls the drain is reddish pink. Trembling, I turn my palms up, but all that's left is a streak of dried blood extending from my thumb all the way up my forearm on my left hand. The sight in the mirror over the sink startles me. I don't recognize that girl, her sunburned cheeks, the scrape on her forehead. Who are you? I think. What happened to you? It's 6 pages. I'm going to read the second chapter. 3 days earlier, Wednesday. 8 people are piled into Anna Markey's 6-person hot tub. Anna herself, the gracious hostess, makes room for number 8 by climbing onto my boyfriend's lap. Ex-boyfriend. I'm not sure exactly. I haven't spoken to him since our statistics final this afternoon. Ben finished the test before me, but promised to wait for me outside the classroom, because that's what you do when you've been dating for 3 months and 5 days. Ben did wait for me, but when I finished the test, Anna Markey was with him. Anna Markey, his neighbor since kindergarten. Anna Markey, who calls him Benny, and puts her head on his shoulder when I'm around, blue doe eyes on me as if to say, "You don't mind, right?" After the test this afternoon, Anna was propped against Ben's locker, pouting through her signature black cherry lips. "I can't believe you're not coming to my beach house this weekend." What I hoped he'd say, "There's nowhere I'd rather be than in Sunfish Creek, sexing up my girlfriend at her best friend's grandmother's lake house." But what Ben did say, "I know, it sucks." He hadn't seen me standing in the classroom doorway. He didn't see me stalk off to my car in tears when he texted, "Where'd you go?" I ignored it, plus his handful of follow-up messages. Anyway, I came here to apologize, but I'm not sorry anymore. Anna folds her hands behind her head, stretches lithe and cat-like. Ben's gaze travels down over her shoulder. Noah McKenna, Ben's best friend, most likely to drop out of college by Christmas, splashes Shanna de Calament in the face. Shannon shrieks because now her flat iron hair is wet. And Anna crawls further up Ben to escape the splash. They still haven't noticed me, standing at the edge of the patio, trembling, hands jammed into the pocket of my Sonny Gensko hoodie. I'm back to how things were pre-Ben. Invisible. His friends, the village kids, only paid attention to me because Ben decided I was someone worth paying attention to. A tug on my ponytail. Jamie Lou appears at my shoulder and takes a swill from the solo cup in her hand. What up, bitch? I point at the hot tub, and Jamie says, oh, shit. Jamie and I stand like that side by side, watching the scene in the hot tub. She doesn't tell me Ben and Anna are only being playful, and that I have nothing to worry about. Since elementary school, Jamie Lou has been the friend I go to when I need someone to be brutally honest about my breath or talk me out of getting bangs. After a few moments of silence, Jamie says, what are you going to do? I don't know. I need time to think. Want to go inside? Jamie glances down at her empty cup. Sure. Inside the house is considerably quieter. We wander into the kitchen where Jamie grabs a bottle of Bacardi from the libations Anna has set out. She pours a few inches of rum into a cup and tops it off with a splash of Coke. Hands it to me. Let's turn this night around. Or, more likely, upside down. We clink rims. The first sip of Jamie's death concoction is so foul, I almost gag. There's no choice but to treat it like a shot. I drain the first cup in a fluid motion. A shudder passes through me, followed by warmth. Woo! I say, wow, make another. Jamie obeys, more than happy to help me board the train to Sloppy Town. My muscles tighten, and suddenly my head is clearer. Kat, my best friend, says I hate confrontation. If she were here, she'd remind me just how much I hate confrontation. But she'd still march right up to Ben for me and say something to make him evacuate his bowels in the hot tub. Kat is not here, though. I need to be a big girl and not leave without handling this. I knock back another drink, make a third, and follow Jamie into the living room. We nestle into a free corner of the couch. The World Cup soccer match, and reason for this party, is on Anna's television, which is approximately Dad owns a chain of Ford dealerships inches big. My eyelids feel like they weigh 1,000 pounds. During a commercial for Buffalo Wild Wings, Jamie puts a hand on my knee. Can we go be mean to Ben now? When I shake my head, the room does a full tilt. I shut my eyes and chug the rest of my drink. I'm going to mom you now. Jamie reaches out and guides the cup away from my mouth. No blacking out on me. Okay. My body gives a twitch and a shudder. I'm ready to talk to Ben. Jamie is at my heels like a cat as I pick my way around the crowd, gathering in Anna's living room. Through the kitchen, out the sunroom, onto the deck, my heartbeat mimicking a terrier's. I stop short of the hot tub. The spot Anna and Ben had been occupying is empty. Noah McKenna, reaching for a beer on the ledge of the tub, spots Jamie and me. Freezes. Where's Ben? I ask. Hey, when did you get here? His eyes ferret around, avoiding mine. I think Ben went to get a refill. Huh. We were just in the kitchen, Jamie says. It's so weird we didn't see him. I'm already waking my way back toward the house, taking the deck steps two at a time. The patio doorway is jammed with underclassmen, friends of the younger Markleys. There are three, and I lose Jamie to them. The brief excursion into the hot June night has made my skin clammy. A bead of sweat rolls down my chest, and I can feel the hair on my crown frizzing. I swallow an acidic burp, scan the kitchen, no Ben. I step through the dining room into the living room. Where the hell are you? My gaze locks on the top of the stairs. On Anna, a towel wrapped around her waist, Ben following her. I say his name. I don't know how anyone can hear it over the TV, but Anna does. Her head swivels toward me. She stops short on the stairs, reaches for Ben's hand, and gives it a panicked tug. He shouts for me to wait, but I'm already halfway to the front door. I stumble on the last step and roll my ankle. Home. I need to go home. I can't drive, obviously. If I call my house, one of my parents will be here in 5 minutes to pick me up. And even though I won't get in trouble for the drinking, I don't think I can stomach the humiliation of telling them what happened with Ben. The shame levels me. I sink, so I'm sitting on the curb outside Anna's. Stupid, stupid, stupid for drinking that much. Stupid for thinking I could ever fit in with Ben Flipoff's friends. There are only two people who don't make me feel like a fool, and they are not here right now because they're together. I dig out my phone. It slips through my fingers and clatters to the pavement. Someday, the screen is going to decide it's had enough and shatter on me. For now, it's intact. I fumble for my favorites. Kat sounds worried when she answers. Claire, are you okay? I squeeze my eyes shut. Are you home? We're at Jesse's. Can you come get me? A pause. Where are you? Anna Markey's. I think I'm going to throw up. Okay, stay where you are. We'll be there in 5 minutes. The thought of Jesse seeing me like this is the cherry-shaped turd on top of this absolute shit Sunday of a day. Claire. Ben's voice reaches me, breaking through the clouding in my brain. Wait. Leave me alone. I stand up off the curb. Claire. Ben grabs my arm. I yank it back and slap him across the face with my opposite hand. He blinks at me, stunned. Commotion by Anna's backyard gate. Someone's laughing. Noah bleeding, damn, I wish I got that on video. Followed by a girl shouting, that's not funny. Ben puts his palm to his cheek. I didn't want you to step into the road without looking. Someone says my name. I turn around. Jesse is at the foot of Anna's driveway. What's going on? Off to my side. Ben says, I'm taking Claire home. No, you're not, I growl. I got it from here. Jesse says to Ben, of course you do. Ben shakes his head, tosses his hands up, and steps away from me. Have fun. She's all yours. Of course you do. What does he mean? By the time I compose myself enough to ask him what the hell he meant, Ben is gone. And Kat is standing next to Jesse. She's in a loose denim button-down shirt, crisp white shorts, gold-streaked beachy waves that can withstand the swampiest of June nights. I buckle over and vomit on Anna's lawn. Kat loops an arm through mine. Babe, help me get her. Jesse's familiar smell, grapefruit shampoo, and the hint of Febreze he sprays on his clothes to cover up the cigarette stench from his aunt and uncle's house. I close my eyes, fighting off tears. One hand on the small of my back, Jesse guides me into the back seat of his car. Instead of slamming the door behind me, Kat squeezes in, lifts my legs, and lays them across her lap so we both fit. I'm sorry, I say. The adrenaline is gone from my body and I'm crashing, my anger replaced by the crush of shame. Why are you apologizing? Jesse asks. I threw up. Kat shifts under me. You missed. You should have aimed for Ben, exorcist style, right in his stupid face. I slapped him. I mumbled. The world around me swirls. I catch pieces of their conversation. Can't take her home like this. Can't bring her to my house. My mom will call hers. My car, I mumble. I can't leave it. We'll get it in the morning, Kat says. I slap Ben. I repeat, good. Kat strokes a piece of hair off my forehead. I'm sure he deserved it. I love you, I say. The satisfied smirk on her face is the last thing I see before everything spins to a halt. And that is the end of the first two chapters. What do you think will happen next? How did we go from the party that we just witnessed and the breakup and her friends being so nice to her on a mountain alone with a head injury? What happened to Kat and Jesse? Where are they? What do you think will happen to Claire? I hope you found this chapter intriguing enough to check out. If not, there's always another book just waiting to be discovered. You can check this book out in the library as a print book. If you need any help with your library card, let us know. Please check the show notes for some read-alikes. And thank you for listening. Join me next time for another Next Reads.